You are listening to the Gay Florida Man Podcast. This podcast is hosted by retired corrections officer Mark DeWolf, who will discuss various topics prevalent to corrections, gay culture, arts and entertainment, as well as current events. Listeners need to be advised that this podcast will discuss situations involving extreme violence, substance abuse, sexual assault, and murder. Details of actual events have been modified so as to protect the privacy of involved parties.
Welcome back to the Gay Florida Man. This is episode 25, Leaving the Church, Escaping the Culture. Before I start talking about today's episode, I wanted to remind everybody, please, and again, I'm on my hands and knees, which is pretty typical for the Gay Florida Man. For the purposes other than what you're thinking, I'm on my hands and knees begging to follow us on social media pages, because we have our own Instagram, we have our own YouTube, we have our own Twitter, and our own Facebook pages with a lot of additional information to help you out to see different details about things that we talk about on the podcast. Now, today really hits close to home, and I'm going to be talking with a couple, a friend of mine, Sean and Brittany, about walking away from a religion that was a way of life in Utah. And I know for a lot of people that have never lived in Utah, they've heard of the Mormon Church. They've heard stories about it, Joseph Smith, the garments, the temples, the wards. But unless you really live there and are part of the faith, you really don't understand how being Mormon encompasses every aspect of your life. And when you make a decision to leave an organization like the Mormon Church and you live in Utah, you are jeopardizing not only your family relationships and your friend relationships, but every aspect of life. It influences your job, your hobbies, everything. It's going to impact your kids' life. And we're about to talk about that, leaving the church and escaping the culture. So joining me is Sean and Brittany, and just to be clear, it's Brittany Bitch, because I had looked up at my screen and it shows who is in this podcast with me, and I was looking for Brittany, and I was immediately corrected by it's Brittany Bitch. Welcome back, Sean, and welcome, Brittany.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks for having us.
How are you guys today?
Fantastic.
I'm excited because we're going to be talking about growing up in Utah in the Mormon culture and what happened with you guys in some realizations that you came to see and you decided to make some decisions. Before we get too deep into it, Sean, how long have you and I known each other?
So I left the prison at 2013, so like probably 3-4 years of that, so 12, 13 years, somewhere in that ballpark.
Okay. And Britt, when did we meet each other?
I think it was whenever you started working with Sean, we went out to dinner fairly quickly, I thought, but I don't remember.
I think it was like a Christmas dinner that we went out, right? Didn't we?
Yeah.
Was it Christmas time?
Yeah.
I feel like it was.
And so what was your first impression when you met me, Sean?
Oh, when I met you? You're super professional. I'd heard people say that you were gay, and I was a little surprised because you were ginormous and looked like you could kick the shit out of people. And I did not get off the stereotypical gay man vibe that you're taught about in Utah, or just, I think, in Christian circles.
When you were told, like, hey, you're going to be working with Sergeant DeWolf, and by the way, he's gay, did you expect to walk in and see Richard Simmons in a corrections uniform?
No, but, you know, someone that had a little bit more flair for the dramatic, you know, maybe a little bit more buff petite guy, not a big motherfucking 6'4" dude that could command a room like you.
Are you saying I'm not fabulous?
You're fabulous.
Okay.
But only
okay.
When you want to be, not by nature.
right. Well, it's been interesting this journey talking to everybody that worked at the prison that I got to work with through the years, and just such amazing people. And I remember back to UNF5 when we worked together, and we had such an amazing time. And I'm so glad, because when you and I first started working together, you were on a swing shift. And I'm so glad that you switched to the dark side and you came on to Graveyards. That was great.
It was great. I wouldn't have made it through the last few years without that.
That was fun. But it was also great to meet your other half, the off-duty supervisor, Brittany. Because you guys got to come to parties at the house, the Halloween parties and stuff, and we got to hang out. And I think we went to Nickelcade one time.
yes.
It was a lot of fun. It was so many different memories. But you guys had grown up in the culture there in Utah. I know, Brittany, you grew up being LDS, and then Sean, you converted into the LDS faith, right?
Yep.
Let's talk about that. What's it like? Because for people that live outside of Utah that have no idea, and I've always heard that there's a difference between a Utah Mormon and, say, a California, Wyoming, Washington, D.C., whatever, Mormon, that there's just a big difference between the culture outside and the culture in the state. Can you tell me more about that?
I'll take this one to start, and Brittany can provide some more nuanced information. So interestingly, we left the church and we grew up in Utah, but we moved to Idaho and now we live in Arizona.
Okay.
And as far as like the cultural aspect, this might sound funny, but I feel like the different Mormons from different states just use that excuse that Mormons are different in different states to brush away the behavior of Mormons that say and do terrible things in any given state. To your point, like the culture is stronger and the ability to isolate yourself from, you know, whatever it may be, people of different colors, people of different sexualities, or just be oblivious to it is easier in Utah. If you're not from Utah, since you're exposed to different people and cultures and beliefs, I think you're able to handle it a little bit better. But right. At the core, I don't think in most cases, most people I've met that really have a strong Mormon belief actually believe any differently than a Mormon in Utah, if that makes sense. I think just being in Utah, because you're so, it encompasses every aspect of your life. It's more obvious and apparent and a part of what you have to do to survive. It's definitely worldwide. Mormons are just different, for a lack of better terms.
I
wholeheartedly agree with that too, by the way.
When I had grown up right outside of Washington, D.C. in Virginia, I'd seen the Mormon temple that's there in Maryland, and it's a pretty impressive temple as you're driving on the Beltway by D.C., mm-hmm. and I would pass it on a regular basis. That's basically the extent that I knew about the Mormon church, is that they had that big temple with the big angel on the top. And then I had met two friends of mine that were nannies in Virginia, and they were from Utah, and they said, you really ought to come out and see Utah because it's pretty amazing. I became very close friends with these two young ladies, and I ended up going out to Utah, and I fell in love with it. It was amazing. It was like going back in time, and the people are so nice. It's so clean. The mountains are like an oil painting. This place is incredible. And so that was kind of where I got the idea to move out to Utah from Virginia, is through Jenny and Tracy, amazing friends to this day. But I didn't know about the Mormon culture. I knew that was the predominant religion out there, but I had no idea. And so I moved out there. Once I actually figured this thing out, it was like getting punched in the fucking face. It is, like you had said, it's so ingrained in that culture in every aspect of life. If you're ever going to go visit Utah, beware, you're going to fall in love with it. There is a dark side that the church operates. You know, they're a lot of marionettes out there. They're calling the shots and they're pulling the string. A lot of people on the legislature are LDS. A lot of policy is based on what the LDS want the policy to be written like. If you just visit, you'll never know that. You'll just think this is a great place.
Right.
I would add to that, and just because it's anytime you're talking about a different religion or an ex-religion, I think the first impression of someone listening to it is that, oh, they're just wanting to bash this group of individuals. And I know some amazing people from my life, from my childhood, that are Mormon and of any faith, right? Like, it doesn't make or break you. And I think, you know, as we go more into talking today, I think that's what Brittany and I have, to some extent, come to terms with. It's individuals can be good or bad. Individuals are nice or are not, et cetera. The further we've gone in life, the more we've realized, at least for me personally, I feel people do that in spite of their faith sometimes. And therefore, you can find people that are amazing. And Mormons, part of that culture is to be overbearingly friendly and nice to everybody. There's a reason for that. Some people there are just overbearingly nice for real, and they're fucking amazing, happy, great people to be around, and are your best friend. And then you deal, you talk about the dark side. A lot of people are that way because that's what they're supposed to be. And then hope you get cancer to get a lesson from God in the back of their mind.
Or if you're the gay Florida man, hopefully you'll get AIDS because, you know, you brought this upon yourself.
Well, so, yeah.
I've heard that a few times.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
No, I mean, that's just, I mean, I know that if you look back, there's a lot of Christian faiths that they believe that.
Yeah.
And you know, which is not very Christ-like. That's what they believe, is you brought this upon yourself. This is God's punishment, which is kind of ridiculous from a loving God. Is there at some point where you started to ask yourself some questions? You started to, because I know, like, from people outside, when you do bring up Mormonism, of course, the first word that always comes to mind is, oh, they're that religion that has all the wives.
Yes. Yes.
Britt and I had talked about the fact that that officially is off the books when Utah wanted to get statehood. Brittany was talking about that, Sean, just a few minutes ago, about the fact that Utah wanted to get statehood, and the Fed said, that doesn't fly with us. You can't be doing that. Brittany, could you elaborate a little more on what you were telling me during our break there a few minutes ago?
Oh, yeah, just that growing up, I didn't realize that that was the reason that the church stopped practicing polygamy, was to gain statehood. And then just how long it took to actually truly stop the practice. And even after they stopped the practice, there's historical records of apostles still doing sealings for polygamous union. So kind of some shady stuff.
That's crazy. Now, and so when you see things on the news, for people that are listening that have no idea what Mormonism is all about, or the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the polygamous communities that you read about, Warren Jeffs, that is not the Mormon church. Those are offshoots where they've broken away and started their own thing. Those are the ones that are marrying minors and stuff. That's not the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. As far as what happens in the next world, the celestial kingdom, do people still have multiple spirit wives?
Yeah, so even though they stopped practicing polygamy on Earth, it's still in their scriptures. Doctrine and Covenants 132 outlines eternal marriage, and it includes all of that good stuff, which basically just means that when you die, if you're female, when you die, your husband will fuck many, many women so that he can populate his own planet.
And so the belief system is that you have your own planet.
Well, now they technically say that that's not a thing. But yes, that's what we were taught.
I actually want to step back a little bit because Brittany brought up a good point that, you know, you'll have Mormon men sealed to many wives, and to people that aren't Mormon aren't familiar with that. Marriage in the United States and most of the rest of the world, it's like a legal on paper union, right? Mm-hmm. So it goes through the court system or whatever system in any given country. Sealing is what you actually do in the temple. And so when you, in Utah, you actually get sealed. The state recognizes that as a legal wedding. So the person sealing you actually has the legal authority to sign the paperwork within the state of Utah for you to be legally bound. That's just a formality. The sealing is actually what binds you to that person for time and all eternity, is what that is. I served a mission in Germany. They don't have that structure there. What they would do in Germany is you would actually go get sealed, and then you would have, I believe, like a 24-hour period for the church to allow you to then go to the courthouse and get legally married. just to have the paperwork. So I think that's an important point to remember, where Brittany's saying they continued practicing it or didn't continue practicing it. They still do to some extent, because you won't be sealed, which is what Mormons actually consider married, the legally, spiritually, eternally binding. That's more important than the legal aspect. Okay. It's still very common for a Mormon man's wife to maybe die and then for him to go get sealed to a second wife, because the plan is still in eternity. You'll be married to these people eternally. You're not practicing polygamy in the real world by being married to two people at the same time.
But there are many Mormon men.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's many, many Mormon men that are sealed to multiple women. They just are not all either living or even divorced. Women can't be sealed to more than one man, but men can be sealed to more than one woman.
Well, that's not sexist at all.
No, there's a purpose.
When you're in this culture in Utah, and I've heard this from people where they've told me stories. I've heard so many stories, of course, working at the prison. You'll go into neighborhoods. Salt Lake is not nearly as saturated with members of the church, such as Provo or further south, right?
Yeah, that's because the gays took over Salt Lake.
Oh, those fucking gays. Those fucking gays. They fucking ruin everything. God, they put on a fabulous parade. But besides that, and the fucking glitter and just the beautiful bodies, those fucking gays, they ruin everything. But when you're down in Provo and there's whole neighborhoods, so you have, and again, jump in at any time, you guys, if I say something not totally correct, but you have certain neighborhoods and you get the local church would be the ward building, right?
Right.
After you get so many ward buildings in an area, then you get a temple or stake center.
Stake center, yeah.
Okay, yeah, stake center after so many wards. At what point do you get a temple?
Dude, I don't know, because it seems like they're just throwing them wherever. It's like a race. Whoever's currently the prophet wants to be the last one to get more temples built. So as far as I am aware, there's not a number of stake houses that then would qualify you for a temple.
I don't remember exactly the numbers, but let's say that you've got 10 wards, they would need a stake and therefore a stake center. And so you have your local ward that has a bishop over it. Then you have the stake who manages all 10 wards bishops as the stake president. And then you have hierarchy over that. From a management structure, the stakes and the wards, and even on a smaller level, branches and such, have more of a functional purpose. Whereas the temples obviously are really important for Mormon covenants to get married, et cetera, et cetera. For the purpose of day-to-day functioning and operations of the church, the temple doesn't play into that as much, although it's still really important in Mormonism. So that's to Brittany's point. I don't think there's a set number. That's more of just, it depends on how active your members are in an area and how many people you're going to actually have going to the temple in their free time. Because there's not a requirement to go to the temple, whereas you are really supposed to be going to church every week, if that makes sense.
You know, they had come out to my house, and I was talking to Brittany about this. The young missionaries had come to my house. Why are you already laughing?
It must have been very entertaining for them. That's all I have to say.
You guys know me, and it's I open up the door, and here are these young, buff men.
Oh, my God. Grooming 101.
They've been working out on their bicycles. And they want to share a message, and I want to share something too. So I invite them in. So I think there was two or three of them. And so they come in and they want to talk about their religion, about their church. And so I hear the spiel. We had a great conversation. Seriously. I had told them, I said, now look, you guys, I think you guys are great. And I really appreciate that you're out there trying to do the right thing for your church. Your church is not a big fan of me because I am gay. Two of them were like, oh, okay. And then the third one, you could see that deer in the headlights, what the fuck? I'm standing in Babylon right now. This is Satan. you know, he hung in there. You know, he looked like he was a little clammy. But we went into the kitchen, and we sat down at the table, and we had a good conversation. And I had asked him if they'd like a bottled water. And, you know, two out of the three were okay. The third one, he resisted as long as he could. He could hardly talk, Sean. Like, he seriously was so fucking scared being close to a gay person.
Well, what if you were trying to roofie him with the water, Mark?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, maybe I was, Sean. I mean, does this rack feel like chloroform to you? But greatest pickup line ever. So now it gets to a point where they say, well, you know, look, would you mind praying with us? And I said, I'd love to, guys. Now this poor young gentleman has to hold my hand. When I touched his hand, it felt like a corpse. It was so cold. He was so scared. I looked over. He was having trouble swallowing.
Well, and that's not going to work for you.
That's not going to work at all. You're going to sit on my sheets, on my satin sheets, motherfucker. Okay, anyways. We did our prayer. They went on their way. And now, look, no shit. They came back like a few weeks later. And they visited me with me again. And they're like, look, you know, we think you're a really nice person. And, you know, we talked. And they gave me a little pamphlet about being gay and how the church is really... The church is really progressive and things are changing. Yeah, it was weird.
When was that? How long ago was that?
That would have been 2008.
Oh yeah, fucking liars.
Yeah, like right before Prop 8 or
What year was Prop 8? I should know this stuff. I mean, this is
I feel remember. Like it was around like 2010,
right? 2010.
Yeah, it was somewhere around there.
2009. Yeah. Anyways, so what happens is they had come back and we visited. I can't remember if the third guy had come back. I think he was probably in the hospital from having contact with me the first time. But we had another discussion, and do you know that they came back a third time?
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
And the third time was a charm because they said, look, we feel like we're in over our head. And we would like you to come meet our bishop at the, I don't know if it was the stake or the ward. And I said, no, look, guys, I will invite you in every single time. I will give you water. I'll sit down. I'll talk with you. I would love to get you into my bed. But I'm not going to go into the ward and talk to the bishop. I don't think that that's going to work for me. If you want the bishop to come here, that's great. I'd love to meet him. Just, I hope he works out. I hope he has a good regimen. It didn't work. They went on their way, and I'm sure that there's some map that says, oh, that house on Tupelo Lane. Fuck no, man. Definitely dangerous, that guy. So,
well, I'm just trying to think, having been a missionary at one point, I'm like, what was going through their minds that after like two visits, they come on a third and are like, we need to get you to meet with our bishop. They definitely had some belief that they were going to help cure you of the gay.
Yeah.
And any conversation that they would have had of you, I guarantee you did not involve you saying anything that would make it sound like you could be converted from being gay. So it's just,
Right, but like, look at being a missionary in Utah has got to be miserable. I mean, now is probably maybe a little bit different, but like when, say, 99% of the city of American Fork is Mormon, who are you supposed to go talk to?
I'm surprised that like guys that go and serve a mission in Utah, they don't end up like leaving the mission weighing 300 pounds because of all the families that feed you the funeral potatoes. they always want to feed you these kids on these bikes running around trying to convert, and everybody's already a member. So what do you do? It's like, well, come back for dinner. We would like to feed you, right? I mean, that's what they do.
I got to say, though, funeral potatoes are spectacular.
Oh, yeah, but they're fattening as hell. I'm trying to watch my figure, Sean. I can't become Mormon just because of the food. Jesus Christ.
You're not wrong.
Well, he definitely doesn't have AIDS. He's too fat. Look at him.
Missionaries, I always feel bad for missionaries because they're like these young kids who are just doing what they're told is the right thing to do. And maybe some truly, truly believe. I don't know. But like when you're 18 years old, it's sad. You also kind of have to be firm with them, because it's kind of like this, if you give a mouse a cookie, like if you're nice to them and talk to them, they think there's like a sliver of hope.
Yeah. So, and it's interesting because the way that the whole church organization is set up. So you have these kids and they're so excited to go on their mission, to get the letter. You're going on a mission. Let me ask you guys this, because you guys would know. You're growing up, you're being told from an early age, when you get to be a certain age, you're going to go and serve the church. Mm-hmm. You are going to help the church grow. You're mm-hmm. serving Joseph Smith and Jesus Christ. This is like a blessing that you get to go. Is it true that it's like Johnny is from a rich family, so he goes to, you know, Russia for his mission. Bob over here, you know, his family isn't as well financially stable, so he's going to Nebraska.
Well, I think that there's a lot of practical decisions that go into like where they place missionaries, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not just all this, you're taught that it's this whole like deeply spiritual decision. Mm-hmm. But actually the way they restructured missions, I think it used to be like that in the past, because your family or you have to pay for your own mission. And so but they finally, like many years ago, changed it so that regardless of where you go in the world, you still pay the same amount, which the last I had heard of was like $400 a month to like help fund everyone all over the world. So if you're in a third world country, it's much less than $400 a month. But like Sean in Germany probably cost a lot more than that. So
sure.
But it does, to some extent, it still turns out like that, because the way they pick, again, I think Brittany said there was this spiritual, God tells them where to send you. It, basically, to apply to go on a mission, you fill out a resume, and it gives your educational background, how you did in school, if you speak any other languages, where you're from, ethnicity, all that stuff. So my mom's from Germany. I am not fluent, but speak German a little bit. I did really well in school. This guy can go to Europe, learn a language and communicate with people. But Joe Bob over here barely got through high school. He's going to Nebraska. You know what I mean?
You know, here's what I'm thinking is like, okay, I'm in the closet. I've been watching these guys in the showers all through high school. I can't tell my family I'm gay. I've got to go serve a mission. Fuck, I hope I go to San Francisco. Please, please put me in San Francisco or New York City or LA, whatever. West Hollywood would be great.
Or Orlando.
Orlando, put me in the nightclubs, bitch.
I was just thinking of the Book of Mormon musical.
You need to go see that if you have not seen that.
I have not seen it. I have not seen it. And I didn't know anything about it. And Sean, you're the one who introduced me to the soundtrack. And it's fabulous. It's fabulous.
Yeah. So for people that are curious about Mormonism, there are a lot of inaccuracies about the Book of Mormon musical. Personally, I feel like they capture the essence of what it feels like to go on a mission from Utah, deal with the realities of life outside of Utah. It's a culture shock no matter where you go. When you feel as a missionary that you're called of God to change the world, you're dealing with people with real life problems, and you're like, this fucking guy needs medicine for his AIDS, not a belief in Jesus to help him feel better. But I'm still spouting like, all's going to be well as long as you pray a little bit more and join our church. So yeah. So if you're not Mormon, you should watch that musical if you ever get a chance, or at least listen to the musical or to the soundtrack, because it's fucking hilarious.
So look, I'm sorry that your T-cell count is like 5, but here's a Book of Mormon and pray more.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's terrible. Terrible. So based on the fact that you are in this culture, you've grown up there, Brittany, you were part of it from the beginning. Sean, you joined later on. When you found out that Sean was going to be working with somebody that was gay, what did you think? What was your instinct? At that point, you were still very LDS, right?
Right. Still super Mormon. I can't really honestly remember thinking anything other than like, huh?
What? What the fuck? They let gays work in prison?
Right. Exactly. I don't remember having any type of reaction.
No.
But I will say that when we finally set up to like meet, just because you guys had become such good friends, I was nervous as hell to meet you.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. were you like sweaty palm? I mean, were you like that young missionary at my house? Like he couldn't swallow? I mean, were you like, oh my God, if I touch his hand, then
no.
I'm going to turn gay too? I mean, I love this.
I grew up so sheltered. Like everybody in my life was Mormon. Anybody I was close to was Mormon. Like Sean joined the church when he was 13, but he only really got serious about it when we started dating because he knew like to get in my pants, he needed to go to church.
Wow.
That's pretty much it. Yeah. That's accurate.
So like I was like Mormon. So I think I was just scared of the unknown. It was just like I had no idea what to expect.
The fear of the unknown. Okay, that makes sense. We meet for dinner. What was your first impression? Were you like saying like how many times does this guy look at my husband?
No. I can't say I was ever worried about that.
Okay. Okay. Good.
I do remember thinking like, "Oh, he's handsome." Also, like, I was struck by the fact that you did not give off those stereotypical gay vibes, just because the only insight I had at all to gay people was what you saw in, like, popular culture. So,
of course,
I expected a much more, for lack of a better term, fruity man.
You're right. No, I get it. And we had talked about the podcast earlier in the day. I had said gay guys always are surrounded by ladies, by female friends, besties, if you want to call it. And there used to be the term that they were called fag hags, which is pretty derogatory. But the new term, which is a lot more friendlier, is fruit fly.
And
that one seems a lot softer than fag hag, which is kind of like old school.
Right.
We met, but then I think there was like a period of time where you had left the prison and we were still in contact. I was still friends with both you guys. And then one time we had talked and I think, Sean, you had brought up something about alcohol. And I didn't know like the whole thing that you guys had gone through. You had said something like you'd had a cocktail or that you drank. And I'm like, wait, did I call the wrong person? I thought I called Sean and Brett.
I know, right?
And so I was shocked because now, and for people that are listening, of course, you know, people that are LDS cannot consume alcohol, no way, off the table, forget it. And you guys, when we had worked together, you were both active LDS. And then Sean had left. He'd finished your degree, right, Sean?
Yeah.
And so you'd left the prison to pursue a real career. No offense against the correctional officers or the people that work in this profession, but you know, Sean's a brilliant guy. Brittany's a brilliant woman. They had other ideas as to like what they wanted to do in life. So Sean left the prison. We hadn't talked for a while, and I was dating Satan at the time and going through a wicked breakup. And so we hadn't talked, and I had kind of just like didn't want to go out and stuff. And then I talked to you, and you're like, you know, we should get together and have a drink. I'm like what, like soda? Like, what are you talking about?
That's so funny. So it's funny though, because like your experience is not uncommon with so many people that find out that friend of theirs that was Mormon left the church, right? You don't leave the church without having put a lot of thought into it and also having spent a lot of time struggling with continuing to live a life that you honestly don't believe in. I think when I first started at the prison, I got made fun of by some of the inmates because I was still saying things like, oh my gosh, and oh my goodness, instead of swearing. Like I definitely let my profanities fly the longer I got there. But I was still like, I think you mentioned when we talked the other day, like before I left, I was still like printing off Sunday school lessons for the primary kids that I was teaching. Every Sunday, you know, Brittany and I had callings to teach in the primary. I think at one time when I worked in the prison, I taught gospel doctrine, which was teaching the adults Sunday school lessons. Brittany, you were in like the young women's presidency. Like we weren't Jack Mormons that just decided to stop. We were fully committed and going through all of the motions and doing what we were supposed to do for a year. To the time I was like 18 to 26, because that's when I got into it because of Brittany, went on a mission, all that stuff. But Brittany, she was, for lack of better terms, brainwashed from birth. All of a sudden at 26, after having struggled for a number of years, she actually came to me and said, I think I need a break because this is just overwhelming me and I'm struggling. My response was just, okay, sounds good. I think I said, you mean I don't have to go to church every Sunday and I can watch football? Cool.
Well, and this is like, oh my God, so mortifying to admit, but like, honestly, meeting you, Mark, and realizing like, gay people are normal. They're just normal people, right? Mm-hmm. And you make like crude jokes and like have a dark sense of humor that I love, but you're also just a really good person. Being around that and finally seeing something outside my little Mormon bubble was what finally let me start questioning all of these things that had bothered me. But I had just like pushed down and just kept, I grew up almost my whole life thinking like that I was broken. There was something deeply wrong with me that I didn't just believe like everybody else around me did. I don't know. Thank you for, I guess, introducing me to a much bigger world.
No, that really seriously makes me feel amazing. That's great. Because I know all the nights that Sean and I worked together, we would laugh all night long and share these different stories. And then, of course, you know, he brought you into my world, which is amazing because you guys have been friends now for a long time and definitely made my life better. It's definitely a mutual feeling, and I really appreciate your guys' friendship. I love you both.
Thanks. We love you too, Mark. Thanks.
Yes, thanks.
Not as much as I love those missionaries on their bikes. God damn, all right. It was amazing.
You met the wrong ones. There are definitely some that have gone to the dark side, even in their mission. So just keep trying.
You know, I had talked about one guy that I had worked with at the prison, and he was very, very staunch. I don't want to repeat the story, so I'll just give the kind of the Reader's Digest version. You know, he struggled. Well, I didn't know this. The last time I'd seen him, he was hardcore and very religious, and you don't say anything against the church. And right. He had all this stuff in his house and, you know, all the statue and the proclamation of the world and all this stuff. And then I didn't see him for several years. Next time I see him, he's at a gay club called Club Axis in Salt Lake City. And he's got a flask and he's smoking. And I'm like, what the fuck happened to you? And he's like, I just couldn't do it anymore. I started reading these gay erotic stories, and I've never had a boner like that in my fucking life. And so I understand what you're saying about like people that unfortunately grow up in that very suppressive culture, and you're taught that this is wrong and you can change. It's just so dangerous, and it's really, really sad. For people that don't know the Mormon culture, I've talked with guys that weren't even gay. But if they came back from their mission early, they didn't live up to the standards of the LDS religion and culture. They were a disgrace to their family.
Absolutely.
One friend of mine from a long time ago, his name is Tom, and he came back from his mission early, and he's so disappointed his parents that he had to move out and he had to live in his car.
Yep.
That's that culture for some. And I mean, there's a bunch of, I have friends that are LDS that are amazing people, and I love them to death, and they're great, and they would give me the shirt off their back. They wouldn't give me their garments, but they'd give me the shirt off their back.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know,
you can have ours.
But it's interesting because like I went through the police academy with one guy, and him and this other officer or officer to be, they really hit it off in the academy, and they went up to a location up in the mountains, like up in the canyon or something, and had sex. But he had said that he took off his garments, went up and had sex, came back, showered, and then put his garments back on.
Right. Yeah.
That's just the mental gymnastics that people go through to deal with that culture.
That's crazy.
Like Sean growing up. I don't want to speak for Sean, but like, because we grew up in the same neighborhood, we were about like six houses away, mm-hmm. and there were families in our neighborhood that wouldn't let their children play with Sean because he wasn't Mormon.
I've heard that. That's very yeah. common there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's like for me, you know, speaking about how much the culture does impact your life there, it does matter. And it's toxic in my opinion, because the fact that this society that supposedly is so welcoming and loving to everybody, right, but simultaneously doesn't want their kids around other children that aren't Mormon because God forbid they corrupt them. And I can definitely say at this point in my life, I could probably corrupt a few people, but Jesus, I was very innocent, sweet, soft-spoken, respectful little boy that mm-hmm. people loved to have around. But because I wasn't baptized, because I wasn't active Mormon, I wasn't worthy to be around other people's children. Because
so
I might create problems. And so for me, my whole reason to join the church was so I could have that friend circle. As funny as it sounds, it was Boy Scouts, not for the gay reasons, that got me actually interested. So like my sister started taking lessons from the missionary, and then my dad decided he'd go back to church with her because he was a Jack Mormon his whole life. And then they really do what's called fellowshipping or missionary work. And when they've got you on the hook, right, they dump all the social activities, all the resources at you to make sure they love bomb you so that you want to be a part of that. So they invited me all the scouting stuff. And I was like, holy shit, I've got like a group of like 13, 14 kids that are super fun to be around that I can do activities together. This is great. My life is awesome. And then I think within 3-4 months of joining the church, they split the ward boundaries, and all of those kids that I had been friends with moved to the new ward boundaries. And I was left with kids that I didn't even really like or want to hang out with. And so then I was suddenly inactive from basically that point till I was about 17. But Brittany lived in our ward, and I think felt similar about most of the kids in our ward. Her friend actually asked me to a school dance, and very shortly thereafter, Brittany and I started dating instead. And because of Brittany's background and her parents' strong faith in Mormonism and knowing that it was important to her and her family for me to be active, to be involved with her, I knew that I had to do everything I was supposed to do, go on a mission. I can't say I didn't brainwash myself into believing. Like, when I commit something, I go for it. So I'm like, well, if this is what I got to do, this is what I got to do. So I did all the studying, did all the research, went on my mission, regurgitated everything I was supposed to. And looking back on it now, it's like, man, that was a weird point in my life because I was doing everything I was supposed to and saying everything I was supposed to say. But my heart was honestly never into it because I never really truly believed. But I knew that for me to live a normal life, to be with Brittany, to just function in Utah, at least for me personally, I had to do that or mm-hmm. my life mm-hmm. would have been fucked.
Right. It's sad that people, again, play this game to that culture and they get married. And people that are gay, and I've heard this story over and over and over, they get married because they want to satisfy their family, they want to satisfy the church. They end up having multiple children, either live their life unauthentically to satisfy the family and the church. A lot of people, like, they grow old and they have this secret. Some of them finally come to the realization that this isn't me. And they come out, and of course, everybody's disappointed. This sort of culture is so destructive. It's so sad.
Yeah.
And I can see why that there is, at least for gay people, a high suicide rate, because you're taught, like, gays are, you can change yourself. You don't have to be like this. You don't have to have same-sex attraction. This is a choice you're making. It's horrible. Well,
I'm going to bring this up just because you used to share, but remember that ridiculous video that you always used to share from like the I forget which.
I love it.
What county department was from like the 1940s or 50s about the homosexual being a pedophile, basically.
The homosexual is about. And God, what was that guy's name? I'm gonna put, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because I'm gonna put that on the social media for our Instagram page. I don't know if I can do the video for the Instagram, but I'll definitely put it on our Facebook page about this public service announcement of being aware of the gay. And it's definitely kind of blurs the lines between somebody that's gay and somebody that's a fucking pedophile.
I don't think it blurs the line. I think it like literally calls them the same thing.
It does. 100% calls them the same thing. But the reason I bring this up, Mark, is because you mentioned about the toxic culture, right? Uh-huh. And it's like, whether it's Mormonism or any other religion or belief system that forces you to repress your natural self,
right,
you go overboard. So like, if you remember the Duggars, right, their kid,
yes,
that, yep, ended up freaking sexually molesting all of his sisters and has done crazy child pornography stuff. And then I just think of the Utah State Prison
SSD special services.
SSD that was like 90% white Mormon men. And if you went to Olympus and you were dealing with the sex offenders, that was 90% white Mormon men. It wasn't, yep, people that, and I definitely attribute that to, they oppressed who they were for so long that you end up going way overboard when you act out those feelings. And so me personally, this is going to sound funny, but in Utah, it's really big, the whole chastity, right? And for women, they're taught that don't wear tank tops because shoulders are sexual. Okay. I go on my mission as an 18-year-old or 19-year-old that has been in Utah and has literally not seen a woman's shoulder outside of on television my whole life. And it's weird because, like, you see all these women in tank tops and you're a 19-year-old on your own and you're like getting turned on every half second because there's all these floozies walking around in tank tops, right?
Right,
cause,
right.
Because only a slutty whore would wear a tank top, right?
That's fantastic.
And then you're away from that. So I mean, it's wrong, but when you listen to the culture of, you know, people from any background that are like, oh, she was asking for it, or she dressed like that, and therefore I sexually assaulted her, right? It's wrong. But if you step back and think in the head, I'm like, okay, if you're getting literally sexually aroused because someone's showing a shoulder, God forbid they're in a bikini, you must think they just want to fuck you right then and there, right? That's, I feel like a lot of the problem is with some of those men that do go overboard and like they're gay, but for some reason also like sexually assault children. It's not because they were like attracted to children necessarily initially. It's like, it's because that was easily accessible because of whatever position they held. They were around children and they could act out and manipulate them, where you can't manipulate adult and you can keep it secret. So that's like a whole like different side conversation. Yeah. Long story short, that fucking culture fucks you up and puts bad ideas in your head.
It's so sad. Just
because of that.
Well, can I share an interesting story?
Absolutely.
About being a child? Okay.
Please.
So,
please.
Like, I grew up in a household that, like, never talked about sex. Like, I don't ever remember having, like, a sex talk or anything like that. But I learned about masturbation when I was 11, turning 12. So, I was just turning 12 because I was going to go into young women's. And so to do that, you have to go meet with your bishop one-on-one and like have a worthiness interview. I went into this room with this like middle-aged adult man that I don't really know. I just know he's like powerful, right? He asked me if I was morally clean. And as a good Utah Mormon girl, I just said, yep. And then he asked me if I knew what that meant. And I was like, no. And then he proceeded to explain all of these sexual things to me.
Oh my God.
Now, I don't think that bishop was a predator. As far as I am aware, he was a normal family man. And like, I only ever had good experiences with him. However, that's disturbing.
It's very disturbing.
And if you get someone in there with like bad intentions, you're just like asking for bad things to happen. Like, the system is set up to breed abusers.
I would think that you should never, at least the same gender at the very least, But
no, some, no, women don't have power.
Man, that's just so strange. It's so strange to be put in that sort of situation and talk about sexual anything with a 12-year-old child is just gross.
So I mentioned that I was just kind of going through the motions, but when we left and stopped going, in my mind, I was like, okay, Mormonism's not for me. I was still initially an advocate that I think it's good for certain people. I think the church teaches good values, et cetera, et cetera. So I initially would get defensive when people would talk shit about Mormons because I would say, look, I don't believe in it. It's not for me, but they teach good things. So we left in 2013, 2014, spring's rolling around. Brittany, so my daughter, Mara, she was what, 5 at the time, Britt?
Yeah, she was 5.
So she's 5. Kids at 5, they don't have any idea about sexuality, or they right. shouldn't, right. unless they're brainwashed or taught about it, right?
Or something happened.
Or something yeah. happened, whatever that yeah. may be. So yeah. Going back to the tank top story, so Brittany is like, okay, it's hot, it's summer, Walmart has clothes on sale, I'm going to buy Mara some tank tops. So Brittany comes home, I believe, with tank tops and says, hey, Mara, I got you some tank tops that you can wear outside in the summer. And our 5-year-old, all of a sudden, her face kind of goes like stonewalled and like blank. I could see her like start panicking and getting anxious. I think Brittany was like, you don't like these, what's going on? And they went back and forth for a minute. 5-year-olds don't explain things really well. And then finally, she said something to the extent of like, what will people think of me? What will Jesus think of me? Right?
And she's sobbing.
She's sobbing.
Really?
She's hyperventilating. As a 5-year-old, I was like, fuck that. The fact that my 5-year-old is having a panic attack because of a tank top means there is something very wrong with the culture. And yep. so then I looked
back. Because we never taught her those things, right?
No, yeah, we never did. And then I started thinking back. I'm like, what happened? And then I remembered. So we were in primary. So in primary, you teach a class, but then you have another class that's kind of all the kids of a certain age together called sharing time, I think. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I was never in primary. At the time, I remember thinking, this is a little weird. In retrospect, it's super weird. So basically, one of the primary teachers, super sweet, nice lady, I think not trying to do it to do anything terrible, she was teaching the lesson on chastity. And she had gotten all of the Disney princesses, and she had cut out pictures of them. And as you know, you've got Belle, who wears the yellow big cap, like old school, like quote unquote modest dress. And then you have maybe your Moana that is riding around in a bikini, immodest, right? She's got all these Disney princesses and she's flipping through them and she's going, Moana, modest or immodest? And all the kids are going, immodest. And then flip to Belle, modest. And so it starts very young. I always found that funny, right? Because it's religion in general, but like, I don't say all religion, but like your more conservative Christian religions are the ones that are all about like, don't teach my kids about sexuality. Don't teach my kids about sex. That's going to be a bad for them, without realizing you're doing that. You're doing that by not doing that. So that's really what kind of sealed the deal for me, where I was like, okay, I don't want to be involved in this at all, where we actually ended up writing into the church and having our records legally removed from the church, because mm-hmm. we didn't want missionaries, we didn't want ward members continuing to track us down. You know, Mara was 5, she would have been 8. As soon as she turned 7, 7 and a half, they would have been sicking the missionaries and everyone on us every week to try and get her baptized at 8, which is when kids are supposed to be baptized. So,
well, that's when we did it. It was when she was 7 is when we put in our paperwork specifically and only for that reason.
Yeah.
What I see when I hear this story is essentially, thank God that Mara has you as parents.
Oh, thank you.
Connect these dots and understand how horrible it is and have an awareness to understand that that's destructive. Because there's right. so many parents that would not see what's happening.
No, and like I say all the time, like I would have stayed in the church until the day I died just because of how hard it is to leave, how emotionally draining it is. Like I lost all of my friends My relationships with every single family member changed because of those tolls. I would have stayed in the church forever. What gave me the courage to leave was my kids. I didn't want them experiencing the things that I did. I didn't want them growing up that way.
That's awesome.
Thank God we did that, because, you know, Mara has come out, and had we not done that, who knows what types of things she would have been exposed to, or where she'd be right now. So
that's awesome. I wanted to ask you about that process. I mean, you had to have all sorts of anxiety about telling your family, hey, this is not for us, because everything that we've talked about in this episode is about the culture and about leaving. Now you make this decision. Sean, was it easier for you because you had come into the game late and you didn't have the level of commitment, whereas Brittany was indoctrinated, you know, from the minute she was born? Was it easier for you?
Yeah, I think a little bit. I think a lot of it, not even a little bit, just because of, one, my personality type, and two, yeah, like, my dad was a Jack Mormon his whole life, but for lack of better terms, was the middle child, so I kind of got ignored, which I liked. You know, when I left, it was just like a from my family side of things. I think my mom still stands, but I think she told us once, like, it's fine, I understand, because you just don't understand what I understand yet. I'm like, well,
she said, you haven't had the same experience as I have, but you will someday.
So she was a little condescending. So for my family, they didn't perceive our decision as choosing to forsake them or leave them, for lack of better terms, or maybe that is the right term. And I'll explain it this way. So I served a mission. The main message that we want to drive home, besides the Book of Mormon, besides all that crap, but like, the main message that we're supposed to teach people about, that is the draw, is this eternal family. Uh-huh. If you become Mormon, if you get baptized and do what you're supposed to do, you get to live eternally with all of your family, friends that are also righteous, right? Naturally, that's what everyone's goal is in Utah. It's like, I'm going to be righteous so that I can live with my mom, so that I can not live with, but you know what I mean? Like, be with my family, so that I can live with my grandparents, see my family, be together as a big, happy family. So when you decide you don't believe in Mormonism anymore, when you decide you're leaving, it's not as simple as your family being like, okay. It's most families perceive it as you're actively choosing to cast away your family. Like, you no longer care about your family, and that's why you're leaving the church.
So guilt.
So yeah, 100%. So that, Brittany dealt with that 100-fold over what I did.
100-fold, meaning like multiple family members are pleading with you, please don't do this. The family's important. You know, you're going to wreck everything. This is going to be your fault. We want you to have your own planet. Sean runs the planet like he runs the household. So it'll be you and
of
some
course,
other people. So you and
of
some
course.
Other women.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you share more on that, Brittany, about what happened with your family when you, like, when the shoe drops and you say, you make that call and you're like, is it an email? Is it a telephone call? Is it face to face? How do you do something like that?
I chose to start it all off with a white lie. I didn't want it to be said so abrupt. So even though I knew I was done with it, I told them, I had a conversation with them face to face, that I was going to take a break from the church. That, like, for my mental health, I just needed to, like, have a break. So I was gonna, you know, stop going every week. I wasn't gonna hold a calling, things like that. When I knew I was done, but I thought maybe if I introduced it slowly like that, that it would be easier to swallow. And I think it was. It played out as best as it could. But because of that, I think because of the way I went about it, it kind of opened a door for family members to try and, like, talk to me about what was bothering me about the church. So it opened the door to what I thought were some really good conversations. And I actually felt like, oh my gosh, maybe this will be okay. Not that I'll stay Mormon, but, like, maybe I can help them understand where I'm coming from. And ultimately, that was a little naive of me, and I still am naive at times, but there was some real heartache involved leaving for sure. I mean, now we've been out like seven or eight years now. So it's, as time has gone on, it's definitely gotten easier, but I'll be honest with you that like, I still feel, I don't know if it's true, but I feel that my family still looks at me differently. They still think of us differently, and that still hurts.
Ugh.
I would agree. I feel that way. It's almost like they've come to terms with the fact that we're not going to be with them eternally. So they might as well get as much out of us as they can while we're here on Earth still.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't have any words besides it's crazy. Yeah, it's sad.
Nobody's ever said that, but that's how we feel.
Sure, sure. So do you have family reunions where you go and everybody comes back to Utah and gets together?
So for my immediate family, no, but my parents, my mom's the oldest of nine. They have huge extended family reunions, and we went for a little bit after we left. When I left, coming from an extended family that large, like I have, I don't know, like 48 first cousins on one side.
Whoa.
When we decided to leave, I was the first one in all of those family members that had like come out, like, I'm done with this. It definitely changed things totally. And now we don't attend them because it's just too hard.
What would happen if you did go to one of the family reunions? You brought your friend from Florida, that's a retired corrections officer who has a podcast called the Gay Florida Man Podcast. How well would I be received at the family reunion?
I think it'd be a mixed bag, but I think everybody would be, here's the thing. Everyone would be so nice to you. Uh-huh. No doubt about it. Everyone would be so nice. Some would avoid you, but everyone would be so nice. And then just like, maybe talk crap about you and us after we left.
Yeah, it's 100%. I think that probably that might be the example of where Brittany says, like, no one says it to our face that we've abandoned them, right? But you know when you walk into a room and everyone's super nice to you, but you have that vibe that they were talking shit about you like 5 minutes before that. That's kind of the vibe. Not everyone. Okay, so like
I want to be careful because we love our family.
Yeah, we do love our family. Sure. So we're not like it's just and I think it's awkward for them as it's awkward for right. us. But part yes. of it is too is like Brittany and I being away from Mormonism now, we can talk about a lot of different topics that interest us that have nothing to do with the church. It is really hard to have a conversation with someone that's a totally committed and involved in the church, because that is every aspect of every conversation. Like if you go to a family reunion, or even if you're just talking to someone from Utah that you know, the conversations almost always revolve around what you were doing in Relief Society this week, what your kids were doing at youth activities, what lesson you did at church this week. And that's even, you know, you talk about going back to the Utah culture. You know, I think with Brittany and I moving so much, we also kind of learned how fake a lot of those relationships are, right? Because sure. you mentioned the wards at the beginning. You're in a very specific geographical area. You see all of these people in church every week. You talk to them. You feel like they're your best friends. They might come over to your house. They might talk to you like your best friends. And then you move one house away across the street and you're at a different ward boundary. And it's like you never existed. And it's not because they don't like you. It's not because they're not friends with you. It's just because the church asks so much out of every individual as far as what you have to commit to your ward, what time you need. Because, I mean, if you're Mormon and you're an adult, you have a calling that's going to take at least one day of every week. If you have children, you're supposed to be doing family home evening once a week. You're going to be going to church on that third day of the week. You're going to have a youth activity for those kids on a fourth day of the week. You're tired Wow. the other 3 days of the week. Your life is fully encompassed with that. So what else do you have to talk about or to discuss besides the church?
They monopolize all your time.
Yeah. So it's honestly, it's not because we don't want to talk or have conversations. It's because it's hard to know what to talk about if you can't talk about church.
Let me ask you this. Has leaving the church helped your relationship with each other?
Oh my God, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you can't be authentic with yourself, like, how can you be authentic with somebody else, even in an intimate relationship?
Yep.
It's just not possible.
We've come to the end of this episode, and you guys have given me a lot of insight, and I appreciate it. I just was wondering if you could share one more thing with me. And that is, I don't know if you know this or not, but the gay Florida man is actually single right now. How would one go about getting referred to the missionaries? Because I'm sure I'm sure down here, you know, they're probably Latino or Asian. And
right up your alley.
I was wondering if maybe you guys could help me out. And I had some questions about maybe the Book of Mormon or Joseph Smith. And I was wondering if you guys could maybe make a call to some of your old compadres that are still active and say, we know this guy that lives down in Florida and he needs some spiritual guidance.
Mark, I am pretty certain.
I'll hop online right now.
Yeah, I'm pretty certain.
You can put in a request right now.
Yeah, you can refer yourself, Mark.
Like, really?
Yeah, go to LDS.org. There's going to be a form on there somewhere where you can be like, I'm interested, and someone I fuck you not will call you within the next 2 days.
I don't have to. I don't have to get on Grindr.
No.
Yeah. That's fantastic. I'm definitely looking it up. For everybody listening, this has been the Gay Florida Man podcast. Thank you, Sean and Brittany, so much for the education tonight.
Oh, I do my best. Thanks for having us.
Did you guys have a good time?
Oh, absolutely.
Of course.
It's always, always a good time talking to both of you. And for those of you that are listening, I'm going to tell you the same thing I tell you every week, and that is to be good. And if you can't be good at it. And if you're sitting in prison, you're not good at it. Good night, everybody.